This is the Fighting the Good Fight podcast, defending taxpayers and solving their tax problems with your host, Patricia Gentile. Patricia Gentile is a taxpayer defense attorney, CPA, the founder of New England Tax Relief, and Patricia L. Gentile Coaching. With 40 years of IRS expertise and experience, she has successfully defended and resolved difficult IRS situations for hundreds of taxpayers. Patricia coaches tax professionals to confidently identify their client's IRS problem and create a successful resolution plan for them. As a fierce advocate, a creative strategist, and solution finder, fighting the good fight with Patricia Gentile is both her passion and purpose to help tax professionals successfully resolve their clients' tax problems.
Welcome, everyone. I'm your host, Patricia Gentile. This is the Fighting the Good Fight podcast, defending taxpayers and helping them solve their tax problems. My guest today is Mackenzie Hesselroth. She is the founder of Hesselroth Tax Services. It's an all-in-one solution for your tax needs. Mackenzie is an enrolled agent licensed by the IRS and a tax compliance specialist. What Mackenzie provides here in the Hesselroth Tax Services is what I found very interesting as an alternative to, for example, QuickBooks. A lot of non-filers, business owners, think that they have to learn QuickBooks, and they're absolutely overwhelmed with trying to even learn QuickBooks on top of the overwhelm and the anxiety of having to compile all their tax records or financial records of their business. And it's just too much. And Mackenzie here has seen this over her 10 years of working as an associate with Dan Pilla. What we're going to talk about today is her recent webinar on understanding and building a profit and loss statement, which is simply what you need to do that Schedule C. And so I want to have Mackenzie come in and start talking about understanding and building a profit and loss statement. Go ahead.
Welcome. Thank you, Patty, for having me. I really appreciate it. I've known Patty now for 10 years. She comes to our conference every year for tax professionals, and I will say you are one of my favorites, Patty. So thank you for having me on. And you said it right. There are tons of sole proprietor, single member LLC, small businesses that just don't understand books and how to keep the books and how to keep their records so that it's easy come tax time. And honestly, they shouldn't have to. It's not something that's taught in school. It should be something that's taught in school, but it's not something that's taught. And what I tell my clients, especially when they bring me on, is I say, you aren't supposed to be the tax expert. That's why you're bringing me on. I have the training. I have the knowledge behind. Let me do what I do. You do what you do. And every single one of my clients has been able to build their business because they're no longer stressing every day about having what is deductible, what isn't deductible, where am I keeping all of my records. I started this on the actual building of the profit and loss and the tax compliance with my brother. He is a metal fabricator. He does spectacular work, retired Marine, but his books were a mess. He doesn't know how to track his income and expenses. So I just sat down with him and I decided to use Excel because it's easy. It's easy to go through the bank statements, the credit card statements, and hand enter everything so that you know where the expenses are coming from and you can see how your business is operating. So first off, a lot of people don't even know what a profit and loss statement is. I can't tell you how many people will come to me and I say, do you have a P&L? And they'll look at me like a deer in headlights. What is a P&L? It's a profit and loss statement. Are you making a profit or are you losing money monthly, quarterly, yearly? You can ideally track it monthly, but essentially you want it for the whole year. It's essential for business planning. If you're trying to bring in lenders or investors for your company, estimated tax payments. A lot of business owners don't realize that they have a obligation to pay estimated taxes to the IRS and state quarterly. And then filing your final year taxes. So without this document and without having this organized, you can't meet any of the compliance requirements by the IRS and the state. So how do we build one of these? It's going to be gross receipts, which is the income that is paid to you for services or sales, or services or products. And then expenses are going to be by category. Every business is going to be different, but a lot of businesses are going to have the same general categories. It's just what falls into that. And that's why it's important to have a tax professional help you with this so that you know that you're getting all the deductions that you're entitled to, but also that you're not writing off things that are not business deductions and can really flag an audit and get you in trouble in the end. So essentially, the difference between those gross receipts and the expenses are going to be a profit or a loss. And then when do we do it? Quarterly is essential because of those estimated tax payments, but I like my clients to do it monthly. That way you can have a clear picture of where your business is each month for loan purposes, bank purposes, and just knowing what growth your business is having.
The thing that I see happen is commingling of in business transactions with your personal transactions in the same personal bank account or the same business bank account. You can have a separate business bank account, but I've seen just as much of people living personally out of the business bank account as I've seen people use their personal bank account and record the business income, deposit the business income and pay business expenses out of that as well.
Sole proprietors are notorious for doing that. And that's the number one thing. The first thing I tell, especially all my clients coming in, the first question I ask is, do you have separate bank accounts? Do you have a business and a personal? Almost 100% of the time, they're going to say, no, I do everything through one account. Well, go out today like this minute and open a business bank account, have a separate bank card, have all of your income go into that business bank account. And then if you have to pay personal expenses, you're transferring that to a personal account to pay those expenses.
So that's very important about separating your business bank account and business credit cards from your personal bank account, personal credit cards. So of course they're coming to us with the best records they have. And probably there is a combination of commingling that has to be separated and identified what's personal, what's business. And this is where it sounds to me like it was much more clearer, cleaner, and straightforward to take such records and enter in on an Excel spreadsheet and not really bother with that double entry accounting of for every debit you have to have a credit, QuickBooks. So when did it hit you? When did it strike you that this is really a good service to provide? A good way, a good route for a lot of sole props to go.
Well, I had a number of clients that would come in, they'd file an extension, they'd come in at September, and it was just a mess. And it would take me days with them to put everything together. And frankly, I just got frustrated. And because I was sitting down doing it at one section, putting basically the P&L and getting all the income and expenses doing it, I just said, will you just pay me to do it year round? This way we can keep up. This way we can make estimated tax payments. You're not going to be penalized for paying a big lump sum at the end of the year because you're going to have your estimated tax payments in and you're going to know where your business is. And there's two aspects to that, planning the business, but then also the tax plan. I can tell my clients, hey, we can save some money here if you use a solo K, which a lot of people don't know about. It's a solo 401K for a sole proprietor. They can contribute both as an employee up to $23,500 and then an additional 25% of their net income to a 401k plan. It's an IRA, solo member IRA, but it's treated the same way. And then it's a deduction and a straight adjustment on the tax return for the income tax side of their actual income. Because this is another thing that small businesses have a problem with is they don't realize that they're paying the self-employment tax plus the income tax. because the self-employment tax is the Medicare and FICA that is normally withheld on someone's paycheck. And the paycheck wage earners aren't seeing that money come out, while the self-employed people are.
That does surprise a lot of business owners, that self-employment tax, that additional federal tax for Social Security and Medicare. Yep. It's not going to get into your Social Security and Medicare account without you paying in. What I'm hearing here, which is awesome, is that all the things that all the offshoots I'm thinking about, important, relevant things that you can work with your clients about, from a solo 401k discussion, tax planning, of course, making sure they're in estimated tax compliance, helping them to understand where their business is so they can manage it, manage their investments back into the business, or expense areas, or maybe market more to grow more income, more revenue. Maybe they're going to increase prices. Maybe they haven't done that for years. I mean, there's so much out of just doing a spreadsheet and keeping it current.
Yep.
What can result from that? Powerful, powerful stuff. Also, you contributed to the writing of Dan's book, The Small Business Tax Guide.
Correct. One of the main chapters that I worked on him or worked on it with him was the business use of home deduction and the regulations and requirements for that, because they're very stringent and strict. And it's along with mileage and vehicle expenses, one of the number one audit items for the IRS.
Do you have a lot of home based? Well, the contractors. Actually.
Almost every single one of mine is home based.
Right.
And realizing what can be deducted, what can't be deducted, the fact that a business office has to be exclusively used for that business. You can't be using it for your day job during the day and your self-employed business at night. You have to have two delineated spots for that business. If you're sharing a room, it has to be, it doesn't have to be a specific, like to give an example, if you have a room that you share, half of it's a playroom for your kids, but it's clearly delineated, and the other half is your home office that is only used for home office purposes for the business, then it is deductible. But that exclusive use, you cannot use it for anything else. Another area a lot of people run into that is when you have a qualified joint venture, which is a husband and wife on a Schedule C together. They can't share that office space either. They have to have two specific offices for themselves for that home office deduction to be legitimate. And then making sure with that joint venture that they know that they should be splitting the income and the expenses down the middle on two Schedule Cs, so they both get credit for that self-employment tax that they are paying. Because if only one's taking it, the other one's not getting credit for that money that's paid in.
But what a lot of taxpayers don't understand is a lot of people think that they can take the home office deduction and also have an office that they go to outside the home.
Well, they can, but when they do that, there has to be a specific amount that is done at home. So you can't just have it for occasional use. It's not an occasional use. Now, if you're coming home and you're doing all of your business accounting or making all of your phone calls from that home office, that's going to count. It doesn't matter then that you have a separate office that you go to as well. You just have to have a specific thing that you do at majority of at that home office.
You mentioned here in your webinar about four commonly accepted records that are used to reflect income. You want to expound on that?
Sure. So there are four. The first is going to be ledgers. Essentially, it's a contemporaneous record of gross cash green money receipts. Everybody has to keep in mind, if you're being paid cash, it counts as income. It doesn't matter if it touches a bank account or not. cash is still income. And the way that you need to be able to track that is to have a ledger. Or if you don't put it in the bank account, if you put it in the bank account, then it's going to be tracked. If you don't, you want to have a ledger that if you were ever audited, that they can't come in and say that you are not, have unreported income. So a ledger is the best way to do that. Bank records, a lot of people don't even work in cash anymore. So they're going to have those bank records where they're either receiving checks, deposits from different financial accounts, including PayPal, Venmo, Square, or other third-party payment vendors. Most of them are going to deposit it. That goes back to having a business bank account, making sure that all those deposits are going into your business bank account so you can clearly track the deposits. Information returns. So a lot of people who are going to be gig workers or a sole proprietor will be receiving 1099s, which is the proof of reporting from whoever paid them that goes to the IRS. You should already have that income included because you're keeping your profit and loss monthly, but it's a good way to go through at the end of the year, make sure you're not missing any entries. And then testimony. Testimony is going to be a sworn statement as to receipts or income. This is going to be very necessary, especially in the case of that ledger, cash ledger. But it's used to supplement other methods. And as I said, the backup for the cash receipts ledger. When a sworn statement or a notarized document, it's basically, as soon as you have that notarized, it's as if you took made a statement in front of a judge in court. So it makes it a legal document. So the best system includes all four methods. And then keep in mind that there is no specific record keeping system that is specified or demanded by the IRS, but you need to do it for your purposes of keeping your records and making sure your business is accurate and it's accounting.
But
in other payment methods, a lot of people don't know if you do a trade or a barter. So say I trade my services for something that you give me, that still counts as income to your business. The fair market value of it. And a lot of people don't realize that either.
Once again, like you said, there really isn't a specific record keeping system that's, you know, specified or demanded by the IRS. So what do you recommend?
What the IRS requires is that you must prove the basic elements of all deductions. There's four of those. The money was paid in the year it was claimed. The amount that is claimed was paid. That the expense is deductible and it falls within a statutory limit. There's some deductions that have limits to them that have other set guidelines by the IRS. The specific additional elements that as applicable are such as intangibles, that home office, business meals and travel, and the profit motive. All three of those are going to be covered in that small business tax guide, especially if you're a tax professional or a small business. You should go to our website, taxhelponline.com, and get that book because it is very in-depth. It's going to cover all of the things that not just my webinar and the profit and loss talks about, but even some other items that that some people don't think about, classifying your business, whether you should be a sole proprietor, filing on a Schedule C, or do you open a corporation, a partnership, that sort of thing. When it comes to wage employees versus independent contractors, how to classify them, the book goes over all of that. So it is really, really important, and it's a wealth of knowledge for both tax professionals and small business owners.
I have that in my reference library for sure. I actually have all of Dan's books in my reference library, and they are my reference materials, no doubt about it. It's a go-to.
There's just too much to know, even as a tax professional. The fact that the tax laws continue to change year after year, the requirements, the numbers, what's deductible, what isn't deductible, the level of deductibility. As a business owner, you have no way to stay on top of that because even tax professionals struggle with that. Unfortunately, in Dan and I's negotiation business, over 50% of our clients come from tax professionals that just didn't know what they were doing and got their clients in trouble.
You have noted here in your webinar that you have listed six commonly accepted types of records to prove deductions.
Yep. So if you ever come into an audit, or in the case of you are looking through your own deductions, canceled checks, those are going to be shown. So if you write a check when it is cashed, so And that can be an interesting, almost a gray area of when does it count? If you write a check to someone, does it count when it's cashed or does it count when you write it? Me personally, in the services, as I take it, when it comes out of the bank account and it actually shows on your records for proof of payment. Because if you write a check to someone and it's never cashed, it doesn't count as a deduction because the money was never taken. You never essentially made that expense. So canceled checks, that's going to show in your register of your bank statements, your cash receipts and invoices. Even when I'm going over bank statements with clients and invoices with clients, while I pull everything from the bank statements, if you're the tax professional, you need to make sure they're still keeping all of their receipts in an audit purpose. They want to have those hard receipts. That's what's going to help prove those deductions. The year-end statements. You can get year-end statements if you buy through the same person throughout the year. Say an ABC supply store. They can send out year-end statements of everything that you purchased from them. Same with Lowe's, Home Depot. Again, I keep going back to contractors, but I'd say 90% of my clients are contractors. But going back to these stores to get the receipts, if you don't have records of them, logs, that's going to be your mileage log, your anything that you need to write down to keep track of. Reconstructions. A lot of people don't realize if they lost or did not keep good receipts, good records, they can reconstruct those records, and they're completely legitimate, especially with that affidavit and testimony. It makes it as if it was a sworn statement in a court of law. So you can go back and use your invoices and use your Google Maps and reconstruct that mileage log or reconstruct those expenses. We've had to do that in a number of audits for clients that didn't keep good records. The moral of the story or the number one thing to think about is don't have to do reconstructions. Get your ducks in a row, get your receipts in line and get on top of this now so that you don't have to hire us to represent you in a negotiation case.
We're talking about records of deductions, but people want to be clear about the definition of what's deductible business expenses.
Right. So any expense that is necessary to earn income to your business that is ordinary and necessary. This is going to be different from business to business, and only you as the business owner can determine because it's a subjective opinion. The IRS can't tell you, oh, you didn't need to go buy that for your business. Well, if it is ordinary and necessary for your business, yes, you did. It's incurred to produce income. There's no deduction for hobby activities. A hobby activity, one of the best examples is a dog breeder who does it on the side. There needs to be a specific profit motive shown in the business. Otherwise, they will come back and classify it as a hobby activity, which basically means you can't take a loss. All of your expenses are only deductible to the amount of income that you earned. Chapter 4 of our Small Business Tax Guide goes into those hobby activities incredibly in detail. And they're reasonable under the circumstances, which is determined by the nature of the business. Again, subjective, but only you know the ins and outs of your business. So, and then other things that we need to do, we need to distinguish between a regular expense or a capital cost. Expenses are going to be generally operational in nature, short-term, goods or services with a use life of 1 year or less. And a capital expense is depreciation. These are going to be assets with life of more than 1 year. So think a vehicle, a large piece of equipment, a computer, things like that. And that's why it's so important for one, the small businesses to hire a professional, to find a professional bookkeeper or a tax professional, and not necessarily a CPA, but knows the difference between business and personal, are able to properly track and organize, reconcile bank accounts, and maintain a proper profit and loss statement. It is necessary for your business. And I run into the problem of people not seeing necessarily the value behind what we do in my services. But I would say that my service is one of the number one things that you would need to purchase as a business, because if you fall into non-compliance, you will be spending thousands of dollars to get out of it. So why not make that upfront cost, that yearly cost, to make sure that you are doing things the right way and that your business finances are being run properly so that you don't end up on the backside and have to hire us anyways.
Oh, you're absolutely right on that. It's much more costly when you're in trouble to pay for the professional who is going to unravel everything. You know, this is what was done. This is how it should have been done. Here's what we need to do to clean that up or reconstruct. You're absolutely right. And then to actually be able to support what it is you're reporting in an audit. We've talked about an audit, and I've heard you mention audit several times, you know, throughout our discussion here. Anything else you'd like to mention about hiring a professional at this point before we let everybody know where to find you?
Well, and that's the hardest thing is how do you find the right tax professional? How do you know someone? Because like I said, I gave the stat that a lot of our clients come from tax professionals that just simply don't know what they're doing or they're not doing it correctly. So also being able to wrap your head around this, getting the small business tax guide, even just to go over it, you don't have to have a degree in it. You don't have to be a professional in it, but you do have to have some idea of how your business works and the things that need to go behind your business so that you can ask the questions and you can decipher from the person who knows what they're doing versus someone who's flying by the seat of their pants. And then you have to review the return. Even if I do my job, you should still be able to look at it and say, yes, this does look correct. This is where I spent my money. This looks about like the income that I am coming in. Because there's too many clients that come in for the defense aspect of it that literally say, I just signed the return. I don't know. Well, you need to know a little bit. You don't need to know everything. You don't need to be a professional in this. But you have to have your head in the game. Otherwise, you could find someone that could either take advantage of you or they're just not very smart.
So how can people find you?
You didn't mention it, but I will. Dan Pell is actually my dad. So I have been around tax litigation and taxes my entire life. I started working for him just over almost 11 years ago now. I do direct negotiation with him, work with people who have tax debt issues. And then now my husband and I are building this compliance business based off of just the clients. It just kind of fell into our laps. It was a calling from God. We definitely realized that this is something that I want to help people so that they can concentrate on their business and do what they do best and grow their business and let us then do the numbers for you, essentially. But our website's HesselrothTaxServices.com. But you can also find me and all of the negotiation aspects of the business on TaxHelpOnline.com. Again, that is Dan's website, the taxhelponline.com. Mine is the Hesselroth Tax Services. We only do a small amount of tax preparation. We are not a full-blown tax service, so we are not going to be buried at in the spring and fall of every year and unable to answer your calls. We are very selective in our clients. We are very specific in what type of clients we take on. And we're not going to overwhelm ourselves with the simple tax preparation of thousands of returns per. So we work on that small, our area of expertise right now is that sole proprietor, gig worker, who just needs to get organized. Then we'll file that tax preparation for you. But like I said, I have and we'll continue to have the negotiation aspect and knowing the rules and the regulations, and able to get anyone out of trouble that might already be in it. But knowing how to get you out of trouble, I'm going to keep you out of trouble.
Right. So you'd be excellent for a tax professional who would like to help a taxpayer with their tax problem, but can't do that work.
Correct.
That you do. They could bring you on as a part of the team and to handle the aspects that you're saying. And then they'll go, if they do a full blown tax season of the spring, fall, like you said, tax season, or they want to pick up, instead of having you do the returns, they'll pick it up from what you do prepare and they'll do the returns and go from there and helping their client from that. I mean, you can offer a lot with your experience.
Our services are incredibly flexible. And yes. The main reason between, I mean, the tax compliance specialist is we essentially are a 3-in-1 service. You're not going to a bookkeeper, an accountant, and a tax specialist. We're all in under the same roof.
I said to you earlier, it's just a coincidence that my first year of Fighting the Good Fight podcast, I ended up bookending it with your dad being my first episode and you bookending the end of the year on this episode. And I can't thank you enough for that. That's
Thank you, Patty. As I said, you've always been one of my favorites and I love you. So it was my honor to come on to your podcast.
I really appreciate it. I'm very excited about this. This business, your business, I find it very powerful in so many ways.
We just want to help people, stay out of trouble, and be able to grow and do what they do best. Let us handle what we do best.
We hope you are enjoying this episode of the Fighting the Good Fight podcast. Make sure you don't miss a moment by simply subscribing on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We are also excited to announce that the Fighting the Good Fight podcast is now available on YouTube. Just search Fighting the Good Fight podcast with Patricia Gentile, and while you're there, give us a like. The Fighting the Good Fight podcast is a Park City Productions presentation. Learn more at Park City Productions 06604 on Facebook or Instagram. I'm Patricia Gentile, and we'll see you next time.